generally we have pretty much two reactions that we make to fear. Fight or flight. Fight or flight. Can you, are you still hearing me? Is this better?
Yeah.
Let's see. How about here?
No.
Is this better?
No,
no, not yet. Oh, there we are. Sounds good. Two natural reactions, two instinctual reactions that we have. Fight or flight. Left hand or right hand. Fight, go up against anything, whatever is causing the fear, whatever is triggering the fear, or the fear itself, or the physical reaction, or run away from the fear, or the cause of fear, the trigger of fear. And for eons and eons, that's the two choices we've played around with, fight or flight. For what it's worth, both of those are incorrect. So we can throw out both of those. So what do we do with them? I mean, it's part of our consciousness. Fight or flight. Well, there's a third choice. Between our left hand and our right hand, there's a third choice. There's a third hand that we have. And that's basically holding them both within us. We'll talk about that as well. Physically, looking at it again physically, we can still continue to choose to react against the physical irritation whenever we experience that. Or we can choose to recognize that the physical irritation is a physical irritation and not a danger. We sat in this room, there was no danger here, but we felt that physical irritation. We were in a place in our mind, though, where we could hold that physical irritation and not react to it. Partly because we knew it was a safe place. Same thing with the flight or fight instinctual process. When we're in a present fear-triggering experience, and it doesn't necessarily mean that danger. Most of the fear experiences are perceived dangers. Standing in front of someone that frightens us. Being around somebody that frightens us. Seeing an experience that frightens us. Standing in front of a group. How many people here love to speak publicly? Okay, one. Two. Okay, how many here don't like to stand in front of groups and speak publicly? What if I asked you to come up here and give my workshop? Would that scare you? Your heart would be beating. There's no danger in it, but there's perceived danger, and it triggers fear and fear reaction. And as we go deeper, as I try for us to go deeper into the levels of fear, we can see where some of those triggers are coming from. Those of you who are following along in the little handout I gave, on the third page I have a little diagram. And in that, that's really, I didn't really get that from anywhere. I just put that together to give us an informal idea of the different levels of ourself where fears can be. The source of the triggers of fear can come from. We have physical, bodily fear experiences like we just experienced a while ago. And we actually can fear those irritations. That's like our red flags that our body is sending a red flag to us, even though there may not necessarily be any danger whatsoever. We're experiencing the physical part of it. next level, the fear of physical and material events. There are some actual material and physical events in our lives, being earthlings and human beings, that trigger the need for caution and being aware and common sense, and we use fear as a red flag for that. There are terrorists out in the world. There are dangers out in the world. We live in a planet that has ways of taking our life when we don't necessarily want it to. People that can hurt us physically. So there is some need for common sense, for actions to take to protect physically. We have to protect our children in this world, each other, elders, women. There are predators out there. And it's wise to take action to respond to those. Emotional fears, the fear of shame, the fear of feeling shame, the fear of embarrassment, the fear of fear,
rejection.
The fear of rejection, the fear of love, the fear of sharing, the fear of joy, the fear of success. Emotional fears, that fears of emotions, fears of our internal feelings, fears of what we're feeling inside of ourselves. How many people love to be embarrassed? How many people love to feel guilty? No, it's not necessarily something we want to experience. And so a lot of times we will react to the fear of feeling shame. We will react to the feeling going on inside of us of feeling guilty about something. The fear of being alone. The fear of not being loved. Diagram also lists fears of past life events. We're all familiar with some of those. Fears from events in which the soul fell. We'll get into that a little bit more. How many people here are afraid of spiders? Snakes. Three people are afraid of snakes? How many people here are afraid of raising your hand when a speaker asks you?
She could bring some snakes out, we'll get the true answer.
Well,
excuse
me, just a little bit.
How many people here are afraid of snakes? Okay. How many people here have figured out that snakes are not evil? Okay. How many people here kill snakes when they do it, when they see them? It's almost a natural reaction. It's almost a natural reaction. See a snake, kill it. It's almost an actual reaction, but they're not evil. There's nothing evil about a snake or a spider. Spiders love how spiders look. Understandable. Someone once asked me about a relationship they'd had. And they were trying to, it was actually the relationship that her daughter had. And she really didn't like the guy that her daughter was interested in. And because the guy really was, had some problems. And seriously enough to where it could have been a problem relationship, and there was, in the process of talking to myself and others, there was a lot of negative stuff talked about this guy. really asked me, and I've had a number of experiences with snakes, and usually catching them and releasing them somewhere else. And I told her, you know, rattlesnakes are not evil. They're not evil in any way. But I'm definitely not going to put one in my pocket and definitely warn my children against them. And it kind of spoke to her. It helped her to get a view of where she was separating out the behavior of this guy versus his worth. The behavior of him at that time, his nature was to be abusive. But his worth was a great deal more. He had worth to humanity. Just like snakes, and just like spiders. The more snakes, the less ticks and fleas. How many people know that? See? The more snakes, the less mice, the less rats, the less fleas, the less ticks. So the less Lyme disease. Of course, if you have chickens, you don't want snakes. Because they're another animal. Like they've learned that humans are a danger.
We don't.
Yeah. How many people here are afraid of black cats? 300, 400 years ago, there were a lot of people who were afraid of black cats. And I'm not going to talk about the atrocities that humanity did to black cats. Black cats. How many people own a black cat? Okay, a few. Is there anything, Greg, is there anything at all fearful about the black cat besides the claws?
It's close enough.
Not a thing. But we were conditioned and remembered that in our minds over and over and over. They were safe, but we acted from fear. It was possible to move beyond that, but we chose to be motivated by the fear instead of the awareness. How many have had to deal with fear of sex? Oh, come on. I'll tell a personal story of my own. My name's Jody. I have a fear of sex. He had a fear of sex. I stopped dating when I was 21 or 22 because I was afraid of what it would do to my spirituality. I thought that I had to choose one or the other. I wanted to be spiritual, and I was afraid the sex part would reduce the spirituality part. I eventually learned through a lot of tough experiences, inward experiences, psychic experiences. I was warned not to do what I was doing psychically, but no. I eventually recognized what I was doing and learned that what I was doing was harmful to myself, and that the path I needed to take was to recognize that I'm a human being and sexuality is part of that. And through the years, I was able to reintegrate a balance there through a lot of work. There are many of us in this room, in fact, I would be surprised if it's not all of us in this room, who have experienced a physical attack of some sort, whether we were children or adults. met a woman one time who was attacked with a knife and had the scars to show it. I met a woman who was attacked by a serial killer. And in that moment of that, she had the awareness to call upon God's help to give her the strength of 10 men in those moments. And while this, her response was to beat the pulp out of him, you know, it saved her life. And that's what God gave her to do. I assume, since he gave her the strength of 10 men to do exactly that in that moment. And once the police caught him and put him in jail, they found out that this guy had killed several other women. So there is a reality, a physical reality that we have to deal with. Nightmares. How many people have nightmares? Interestingly enough, I think my own personal opinion is that nightmares hold the richest source of information for us to deal with our fears, and they hold the information around the solution of resolving the fears. If we can just study them and learn from the nightmares, they hold the fear and the healing of the fear, both. Normally we think, well, they hold the fear, but we tend to avoid the nightmare, so we never get through that to be able to understand the healing of that fear, the resolution of that fear, how to resolve that fear. We're so busy getting rid of that nightmare, not wanting to wash that dish, that it comes back again and again. I mean, think about the dishes in the sink. They just sit there, waiting. There's no consciousness to any dish, you know, human consciousness. It just sits there waiting, staring at me, waiting and waiting, staring at me, waiting, until I get up and start get my hands wet and start scrubbing those dishes. It takes a little bit of time, a little bit of effort. But dishes of themselves have no consciousness. They're not in a hurry. The fear is just there until we get in there and just start scrubbing away or resolve it in some manner, some form, which we'll talk about as I'll go on to some more. We've already mentioned public speaking, and let's see, how many volunteers did I have to come up here and give my workshop?
We didn't count the volunteers.
The physical act. Okay, here's another little exercise. I'm standing up here in front of probably about 30 people. Did everyone get a handout, by the way? Okay. Okay, now, let's everyone here stand up. Okay, now I'm sitting down, and I'm all of your audience. Now, how many of you would feel comfortable with giving this workshop all together as a group to me? Is there fear there? No. It's the same act. Go ahead, Phil. It's the same thing. But one is fear-induced, one has fear connected to it, the other doesn't. Because it's a different situation, yes, but it's the same event, same physical act we're going through. Nothing different physically, but it's different inside of here because we perceive things differently. Am I talking to self? Okay. Part of that experience is I'll go ahead and mention this about fear of public speaking is related to the fear that's related to our value of ourselves. Do we value what we have within us to the point of sharing it with others? Do we value our skills at sharing ideas and thoughts and emotions? Do we value the package of all who we are? And sharing all of who we are with others. I'm standing up here, I'm not just a speaker. I'm some of your friends, those of you that we've become friends with. I'm more than that with a few of you. I'm still connected to people out there. I'm a brother, I'm a son. I'm not a father, but I'm all these other identities. I've gone through graduate school. I've gone through, you know, lots of college, amassed massive student debt, just like a number of other people. I've done things in my life that have taught me hard lessons. I've learned things. I've meditated. I've grown. I've hurt people. I've helped people. I've irritated people. I've helped people to laugh. I've annoyed some people. Ex-girlfriends, mostly. But all of who I am is standing in front of you. In essence, in just a moment ago, all of who you were was standing in front of me. So what we have here is that in that moment, you forgot about the fear. We forgot about the what was yelling at us in the mind, and we saw the value for itself. In those moments, all of you together recognized a quality that you didn't when you were experiencing the fear about standing up alone. Fear can devour our awareness. Awareness can devour our fear. Interestingly enough, it's possible to have a fear of the opposite gender. Fear of women, fear of men. These are more prevalent than people realize. It's not necessarily knowing a person or a man or a woman that's fearful, but rather fearing the entire gender. You'd be surprised how prevalent that is and how underlying that can be to how we live our life, the things we do, the risks we take. The reason why that is because we may have past lives against another gender. We may have prejudice against the gender. And that will trigger so many different dynamics inside of us that we eventually reach a point where we're afraid of that gender because of an unconscious feeling there may be retaliation. See how that kind of just blends together? It can make sense. And I'll mention real quick, you know, if anybody has anything they want to say or questions, just go ahead and pop up. It doesn't matter. Fear of other races. That's common. That's been common in our society for a long time. I mean, fear of blacks has been fear of Asians, fear of Mexicans, fear of Hispanics. What else is there? Fear of Native Americans. It's been a part of fear of Muslims, fear of other cultures. I mean, if you think about it, every person in this is usually about a set of about 50 to 75 cultures. And it would be very easy to pick out some. I mean, how many Catholics are in this room? Okay. How many Baptists are in this room? How many Church of Christ? How many Mormons? How many? There's a bunch of different cultures right there. How many women are in this room? How many men are in this room? How many of one race are in this room? How many of another race are in this room? All these cultures. If we're a part of one culture, then maybe we may be holding prejudices or beliefs about the other cultures, which in turn can trigger and create a dynamic where we may eventually fear those because of the unknown qualities. The truth of the matter is we can never know what it's like to be another culture until we are that culture. I can never, ever know what it's like to be a woman. No matter how much I listen to you, or talk to you, or hear your stories, I can never know what it's like to be from a woman from the inside out. I was telling Tony the other night, and Suzanne, even if I had a vagina, it wouldn't tell me what it's like to be a woman. A man with a vagina would not tell me what it's like to be a woman. I could never know that. Even though having a vagina almost identifies you as being a woman. But, you know, I don't think that's necessarily going to happen, that I'm going to get a vagina. But it wouldn't tell me what it's like. It wouldn't give me the experience of being a woman. Being white, a white male, I'm never going to know what it's like to be a black woman.
A lot of times the fears are because we've never been in contact personally with people. I haven't gone to school in Detroit, in fact. And then the Indians are in the West with that culture. And the Oriental, I have made friends with. And with the Brown. East Indian, and it's when you are around them or get to know them, any of the fears you find that just like you, I mean, many things, their culture might be different, their modus operandi might be different, but they're okay. It's just a matter of not. Of course, if you're driving down to a whole slum area that's predominantly black, you would hear because of what you heard and what you heard before that in Watts, in L.A.
There may not be, right, there may not be any danger.
It's like what? It's
but
what
the fear is there.
People that are positive,
right.
And there's some people that are negative, you know?
Right.
We're all
human. We'll still, we'll drive down lots and feel that fight or flight experience. What she's saying is, to sum up what you, I'm going to sum up what you said. There's no such thing as a living stereotype. When we get to know people as individuals, we recognize that there's no such thing as a stereotype. When we get to know them one-on-one, we recognize that they're not what we're afraid of. There may be an unknown qualities about them at first, but getting to know somebody as an individual removes them from the common stereotypes. They're no longer a stereotype when we get to know them individually. Now, most fears, most of the major fears, we don't get confronted by those daily. We may actually, but there are some that we get confronted by daily. As we're meeting people on the street or going about our work, we're going to feel some fear, some sensation of fear daily. Sometimes, many times during the day. Traffic accidents up ahead can trigger some type of fear. Driving fast. Somebody else is driving. That's a big one for me. So some of these fears we're going to experience on a day-to-day basis. They may be small, we may not react to them, but we're going to feel it, we're going to notice them. We may react to them internally. And this is really what I'm... These are what I offer that we can work on the easiest. These are the ones that are triggered by almost a non-dangerous event, more memory than anything else. Memory of when our life was in danger. One of the first times I ever stood up in front of a group was back in graduate school, and I had a class where every member was presenting a topic, and for 10 minutes we'd be videotaped. And I had my notes, it was my turn to go up there. I was nervous and scared and all this stuff, but I had my notes in my hand. I was up in front of everybody, and I forgot my notes were in my hand. I was so scared, so nervous. I was probably nowhere in the room. I forgot my notes were right here. I talked for about 5 minutes. I remember. At the end, there was a lot of silence in the room. I think they were praying for me. There were a few jaws going like this. I didn't look at the videotape. Because I knew it wouldn't help me, because that's not where the problem was. I never looked at that videotape. When I stood up here, can we see it? $5,000.
Well, let's put it up to bid.
No.
Are you careful?
Oh, I'm going to have to deal with that one, though.
Do you have it?
I do have it.
All right, next year you got to bring it.
How about if I just act it out for you? I'm not sure what I'm going to do with that video. But what I saw was that it was going to have to be a process going on inside of me that I was going to have to use. I was going to have to take a look at what was bringing forth that fear. And so I started looking at it. And I saw past life events. I saw the chemical reactions I was reacting to. I saw a past life where I was being attacked by Indians. I was a pioneer. I saw a past life where I was a cavalry member being attacked. I was an Indian being attacked by cavalry. I saw pirates. I saw Vikings. I saw all these groups coming at me. And it required me to work through each one of those, recognizing that these are specific events, to hold inside myself that these are part of my life, these are part of my evolution, these are part of my experiences, but that I'm more than my experiences. I can allow that fear to devour my awareness, or I can allow my awareness to devour in the fear. I'm going to talk about that now. We talked about fear of emotions, fear of success. I didn't list that one. Fear of being seen. I'm being seen up here. I am, in effect, speaking about Jody. I'm teaching who I am. And that's exactly what every one of us does in our life. In all our lives, we teach ourselves. We take a look at Jesus' wives, all his wives. What he taught what he exhibited, what he demonstrated, was himself. What people learned from was how he lived his life as himself. Because that's all we have. What we teach is ourself. Whether it's fear or whether it's love, whether it's support or whether it's shame, whether regardless of what it is, what we teach is all of who we are. In fact, standing up here and having not worked on that tape, I'm teaching how not to work on that tape. So I'll probably go back. Thanks, Bob. Deeper, a few more existential fears, the fear of our own power. More likely, that fear, it's a real fear, a fear of our own power. Because where does that come from? Usually it comes from having misused that power in the past and recognizing that we have the capability of misusing it again. Fear of ourselves and how we use them. We find ourselves in a situation where it may call for us to exhibit power. And we shy away because we have that fear of doing it, messing up again, abusing that power again. Fear of death. How many people want to leave here before you fulfill your purpose? No, go ahead. I know.
No, but it's fear of death, and I think maybe sometimes in the ministry, I've been my husband's caregiver for 9 years. I had about 4 phone calls with him, and I see him. He's a mobile student. I'm not sure because he has a confusion. And the family confused me even stronger. Mom was a big judge. But I'm so scared, and yet I know when they cross over, I'm being selfish, they're much happier. But the fear felt like the blood was drained out of me because I thought I lost it two different times. And I'm not a fearful person normally, but I be medically confused, you know, I don't think it's a fear that I was going to be alone. Yeah, he was leaving me, and I'm sure some ladies here who lost their mate. It was
fear of not being loved in the future. Or
well, that could be that I have a big family that I have, you know, a lot of love for me, but I just love him so much, and I just that fear, you know, when I'm standing by him and I see you, and you know he's getting so through. It's happened 4 times. He's 80 now, and I just. You know, what would someone think was the rumors? The fact that he is crossing over and I'm leaving him, I'm fearful to be alone, or that I don't want to be parted from him. I don't know what other people.
Or all of the above.
All of the above.
Or the feeling or the fear that we're not going to be able to work out all the things that we were trying to work out, or we're not going to be able to heal, the fear of not being able to heal a relationship, the fear of not being able to grow and develop in that relationship, the fear of losing the opportunity to love even more. All of these are part of that experience.
Because we've been joined at the hip, you know? I'm
joined at the hip. When death happens, that's the end of, or we perceive that as being the end of the possibilities that any particular relationship can bring into our life.
Because on a spiritual
we perceive that. It's not necessarily true.
It's hard when you face it right straight on.
Very much so. None of this is easy. I mean, you know, I talk about washing dishes, and washing dishes is really just a metaphor for jumping in there and trying and doing, working at it. And the process of asking this question, why am I afraid? What's this all about? Is the process of washing dishes to understand the fear. We can react to it, we can fight or flight, or we can hold them both and bring our awareness into a greater and greater amount.
Because I have two sons, same way you're babysitting it this weekend, and I could come because it's the first time in a long time I've been able to come to this time. And so I'm very thankful for that.
You're choosing your awareness to allow your awareness to become more powerful, more stronger for you, so that it to help you through this, right? Which is we're all doing that.
Thank you.
Another one, fear of faith. Faith is an actual muscle, but it comes with responsibility and connotations. I mean, we can use faith. We know faith is powerful, but we don't always, because the power of faith, we can have fear of the power of faith. The power of bringing God into a situation. One trigger for that fear could be, well, what about the guilt I feel about not bringing it into all the other situations? What about my desire to not really put forth the effort to bring it all into all the other future situations? The fear of faith. Because we don't always want to have faith. We don't always want to put forth the effort. These are just examples. The fear of faith is more a spiritual fear. God's fear of calling us can be a very real fear that we have inside. Calling us to do what? To have nails go through our hands? Calling us to go out into the world and evangelize? You know, it's not really my thing. Fear of God calling us. Say, no, I don't want to become a, Jehovah's Witness. I don't want to go door to door. I'm just not that kind of salesman. What may help us through fears like that is recognizing that God has a unique purpose for us. God doesn't have the same purpose for every person. He has a unique purpose that only we can fulfill by being the person that we are, by walking the path that we are. We have our own unique purpose that nobody else can fulfill. Because if we're out there evangelizing to fulfill somebody else's purpose, who's going to fulfill our purpose? If we're out there doing everybody else's job, who's going to do our job? Who's going to be us? If we're living somebody else's life, our life's not going to be lived. Fear of the cross. Well, we've been working on that in our study group the last couple of weeks. The fear of the cross. What it means. I'm not going to go into what it means here because it means something a little bit different for everybody. Does it mean that we're all going to have to be strung up sometime? Does it mean that we're all going to have to go through tremendous suffering and anguish and pain? I don't know. One thought, one belief is that it's already finished. That path is finished. But then, again, we all have our own unique path. It could be that our cross is dealing with fear. Each of the paragraphs on the handout, I list also ideas on how to work through this. In this case, entertain a belief in an infinitely benevolent, giving, selfless, forgiving, patient, kind, and loving God. If somebody doesn't believe in that, entertain belief. See how you like it. Sometimes people are so close-minded that we have to suggest it. Well, entertain this idea. You don't have to believe it. Just entertain it. Think about it. I use that word, actually. I use the word entertain. Because it connotates TV. Entertain this kind of thing. No safety. We're dealing with that in this country right now. There's a fear of no safety. We have the fear. Is there really no safety? Does our life and all that we have in our life depend on somebody else? On 19 hijackers? Is our life, who we are, what we strive for, what we hope and dream, what we believe, depend on 19 other people? Or does our life depend on God? And what our connection, our relationship with God? We've been talking a lot in this weekend also about conspiracy. We've been talking about, you know, all kinds of government groups and hidden groups that are in power in the earth. And, you know, a number of different aggravating facts. These guys, this, you know, I don't even remember their names anymore. All the different conspiracies, all the governments. But does our life, does our happiness, does our fulfillment of our purpose depend on that person? No. But we still have the fear of no safety. Because, well, number one, it's not necessarily an unwise thing to deal with this. I mean, everybody's volunteering to give up their shampoo. And that's helping us feel safe, right? Everybody's safer now that they don't have their shampoo. In truth, the only safe thing that we can rely on 100% is that God loves us. God is love, and we are one. There's no changing that, ever. There's nothing that can ever impact that. There's no action that we can ever do, or anyone else can ever do, that will ever take that away. We are one. There's nothing else about us. Nothing we can do in this world, or after, before, or ever, nothing anyone else can do, can ever change God. Nothing. The fact that God is one, we are one with God, is the same thing. Nothing we ever do, or think, or believe, or act, or fear, can ever change God. Because of that, God is the one safe. Whatever. Yes?
I think one of the big fears a lot of people have is flying.
Flying.
I had it a long time ago.
Interesting. I would say there's probably past-life connections to those. Those are always fears. Trusting other people. It's appropriate to trust other people, except when they're being untrustworthy. Does that make any sense? We can trust them when they're being trustworthy. We can not trust them when they're being untrustworthy. But we have to learn to trust ourselves to learn the difference. Because every one of us are both trustworthy and untrustworthy at different times. We can trust others when they're being trustworthy. We can choose to not trust them when they're not being untrustworthy.
I don't trust you on that.
I don't trust that about you. But fear past lives. Past lives. Yes. Okay, well, I was just going to say that past life events that have happened to us or that we've witnessed or that we did to others will also engender fear. Because we understand at a spiritual level, that the deeper unconscious level, that there is a karmic force in play. And I'm not getting into all of karma, because that's a whole wonderful, great workshop on itself. But the life force coming back around, manifesting itself in a negative way, what we call a destructive way, in a way that denotes separation or seems to denote separation from God, like an attack on our World Trade Center. People were asking, where is God? God was in the response. That's where God was. The response that people brought forth. But all of those, we know at a deeper level that the things we did to somebody else can come around and bite us on the backside in a big way. So there's that underlying fear of past lives. Franklin Delano Roosevelt said, we have nothing to fear but fear itself. Well, I'm going to change that. We have nothing to fear, including not even fear itself. Now, integrating that fully into our consciousness is a different thing. It's a process. Fear of falling. Well, not necessarily falling from heights, but fear of failing spiritually can come from past life recognition of our soul that we have made serious mistakes in past lives, and we have, like I said a while ago, we have the capacity within us to make that mistake again. In fact, many of the fears we have that are almost automatic are coming from mistakes we've made in the past, and we're recognizing the situation forming again. Here we are a thousandth time, the situation is here again, and I'm feeling that fear again, and I can either fight or flight, or I can hold on to those. I can hold a moment, not struggling against the physical sensations or not struggling against anything, and look farther into the event that's playing itself out in front of us and see if there's a third response, a response coming from our holding ourselves in place.
When I was afraid to fly, I was flying to the west coast of New York, and I got in the plane and I got claustrophobic. I had to get out of that plane. That plane crashed in Chicago.
I wouldn't necessarily say that was fear. I would say that was something telling you to
respond. And I looked up and the people all go in a plane crash. It was kind of a calming group that left the earth at the same time and maybe had happened before. But, you know, in a case like that, I think sometimes our fear...
No, I wouldn't necessarily say that was fear. I would say that was an inner guidance coming forth, and you were recognizing that you needed to act from that.
Because I'm not a panicky person, but I panicked. That's true. Yeah. She had her ankle. I just
plane.
Did the impetus come from deep within, though?
Oh, yeah, I felt like
absolutely.
I had to get out. It was like maybe feeling like I was sitting in a coffin. Mm-hmm.
Again, I would say that was really guidance from within. Your soul was telling you you needed to move. You needed to get out of that plane.
Well, thank you.
Those kind of experiences are a little bit different from fear. Fear being a reaction, you were taking an action.
Okay.
There was guidance there. It wasn't what you were.
I've had other experiences in my life similar, but nothing as profound as that. Particularly when I found out.
Guidance experiences.
Correct. Right.
Well, the reaction also, or the feelings that came up inside of you were, I would say, more common sense. A part of you deep in your unconscious was recognizing that this may happen. You may not have been consciously aware of it, but you were tying in, connecting to...
I didn't know there would be a crash.
Yeah, you didn't know there would be a crash. You just knew that something was motivating you to get out. And whether...
So sometimes fear is good.
Well, you were connecting to an event happening and recognizing and acting appropriately. I still wouldn't call that fear. I would say that was action. That was, you may have used fear as a tool to help get you off. But I don't see it that being the trigger being fear. I would call that intuitive awareness or unconscious intuitive awareness even, that something was going on. Because the source of that was not fear. The source of you getting off the plane was not fear. It was the intuitive feeling that there was something that you needed to act upon.
Believe me, it's panic.
Yeah.
I don't get panic or anything. Boy, that's really... You know, they were going to start rolling that plane out, and that door was shut, and then
that came off an hour. Awareness was part of your action.
Got a lot of my
feet. Thank you. Molly,
would you like?
The Gift of Fear by Gavin DeBecker.
That's beautiful. It's about fear, but it talks about there's this distinctive thing that's built into us that says you've got to act on that when you get it. And then there's that fear that you make up. And you talk about how to think and how to act.
Right. Right. I mean, collective fear, look at the United States right now. We have a collective fear about terrorism, acts of terrorism. It's enhanced by the news, but it's still a collective fear because it's spread through the collective of consciousness. All of us have to deal with that. Even though we're dealing with fear and we're here, we're still going to turn over our shampoo when we go through the line at the airport. But that also comes from the feeling like, well, just in case.
So as we were
we do this work, the fear lessens and lessens and lessens. It may still come up. I mean, I've done public speaking for like 5 years now of these retreats, and I always have a nervousness when I'm beginning, but the nervousness lessens and lessens and lessens because I'm working on that experience. I'm not being motivated by the fear, and so that fear lessens and lessens and lessens each time. And that's part of why, when we scrub away some of those dishes, we have less dishes.
It wasn't even the fear of sight. It was the fear that was the thing that was left. It was a high consciousness that was
I'll throw out something. There's a collective rush hour fear. Anybody's ever driven in rush hour? There's a collective consciousness rush hour irritating fear. And we tune into it when we're there. One of the things, and I'll offer this, one of the things I think we all may be able to take do to help that is as I'm driving sometimes, if I remember this, I'll just start going, driving down the freeway, in my rush hour traffic, and it sure helps me. Did you see the home up here?
Yeah.
Okay. Allowed their awareness to act. It was it was appropriate action, not necessarily a reaction. It may seem like getting water barrels and storing food may have been a reaction. It is still an opportunity for us to act because we don't know what's going to happen. Laughing it off, I wouldn't have recommended that, because even I couldn't see the different things that might happen. And there were actual things that did happen, computer problems that did happen. It wasn't on the wide scale that everybody was predicting, mostly because they addressed the problems that would have contributed to the mess. They fixed the computers. There was a tremendous amount of effort and financial resources put into making sure it didn't happen. And people laughed at them for doing that, and yet it could have been that action they took that prevented it. Now, cleaning up the fear is an actual process itself. Like Kathy had mentioned, she worked in the awareness, working with the awareness of the Holy Spirit's presence, working through her fears. You as well. Part of the process in working through these fears, like I said a while ago, is holding it, but not necessarily reacting to it. Or it's a process of witnessing the fear, observing the fear, but recognizing that it's only an experience that we're going through. That's one way of working through fear, recognizing that it's an experience, it's a reaction, it's a physical sensation triggered by several other different things that we can study, go deeper inside ourselves, asking ourselves questions, well, where is that fear coming from? That's one process. Another process is what I call a spiritual process. The very energy related to that fear can be integrated into the third chakra. When I work on that, I say a prayer, God, let it come within. And it's added to my consciousness, and I feel the experience of going like this. Where I may be down here, Lord, let it come within, and I feel like that, and again, like that. And what that brings me, and I consider that a transforming process in my chakra, what that brings me is an awareness of what it's like for all those other people out there to feel fear. It gives me an awareness of their experience. It helps me to know, oh, this is what it's like for a human being going through this, experiencing fear. This is what it's like. Now I know. Now I know how to help that other person. Now I know why it helps to be patient. Why it helps to hold them in their process, to create space for them. They're going through fear. Now I understand what this fear does to people. By integrating it within myself, I understand consciousness and how people are dealing with fear. I understand why they act from fear. Well, our own fear is the fear we experience inside. We can see other people's fear, but we don't know that experience. It doesn't necessarily mean we have to go through all the fears there are to learn. But the fear that we have, we can grow and learn from. We can know what it's like to be afraid of sex. Or we can know what it's like to be afraid of another gender, or blacks, or Mexicans, or terrorists. We can know what it's like. We know what it's like. We have experience. We know what it's like to be afraid of terrorists. We know what it's like now. Now, How, what are we going to do with that awareness and that knowledge through the rest of evolution? We know what it's like to be afraid. Are we now going to do that to others? Is that, how is that going to help the evolution of mankind? So it brings us to a point where we can expand and understand and have a greater awareness of the human condition with fear. Fear is a tough one to work through. It brings us face to face with so many aspects of ourself, and a lot of times all at once. Any questions about that part of life?
No, just sitting here thinking about all the aspects, types of fear that you look at. What about...
And those are just a few.
But I'm thinking about, is there an implication of fear in habits? In other words, you have a fear at some point in your life, and so you create habits in your life that you can forever experience in that game.
Right. We've created a safe space by carrying out that habit.
Yes.
It's an illusionary safe space, but habits are basically intent on creating a peaceful, or, well, I'm going to use that word in this any particular type, a situation or an environment where we're not troubled by anything, anxiety or fear or anything coming from it as something that's different. Habits and routines. Okay, you want to go next. Some would say that the fear and ego pretty much go hand in hand. I don't talk a lot about ego, though, because I enjoy talking about God more. And
workshops on fear.
No, the workshop is on awareness. The workshop is on awareness. Allowing, helping to have awareness develop here. But yes, I get your joke. Absolutely sure does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Adrenaline is, that's the word adrenaline comes from. Oh boy.
Past fears that you might not even remember.
Such a surprise to me when I started with that prayer, and it was such a surprise that when I integrated that energy, and it was a real active process that I did, what I got in the transformative process was understanding. It was a very real surprise. The opposite side of that fear was understanding. It surprised me. I mean, you wouldn't think that, you know, that chakra, that experience, that solar plexus, that what you get is understanding. I mean, that's exactly how it transformed within me. Whether or not it's going to be like that for everyone, I don't know. But for me, it transformed. What I gained was understanding and helped the expansion and energy. There was a Star Trek episode, original Star Trek, where I don't remember the title. I'm going to title it The Empath. And in this Star Trek episode,
The Empath.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I gave you my notes, didn't I? Your cycle, that's what it is. So it's got to be. But in that episode, there was a being that was learning how to heal others. And she was resistant to experiencing the illness that the doctor had acquired. But the only way the doctor could be healed is if she took on the illness from him. And that, in essence, that was her training. She was in training. But by her taking on the illness, it could possibly kill her. Sounds familiar, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Why? She eventually did take on the illness. In this episode, they had a happy ending. She didn't kill her, but it helped her to grow more in the purpose that she was coming into that life to do. In essence, the process of understanding and even understanding fear is the process of us taking on the consciousness, like Jesus did throughout his entire evolutionary 33 lives, of taking on the human experience so that we could heal this. I mean, Jesus, when he said, and I mentioned this last night, when he said, "It is finished," for me, it wasn't just that he was finished with that life as Jesus. He was finished with the entire evolutionary process. The evolution of humankind from beginning through end out of the earth. And it is... Would he have been able to do that had he just had that one life as Jesus? Well, I can't see it. I can't see it happening. Because the metaphor I used last night, he would not have, let me back up a little bit, I'm going too fast. It's almost like somebody working on a Rubik's Cube and not knowing how to fix it, and God saying, "Will you go down there and show him how to fix that Rubik's Cube?" Well, you can't. And then he gave him a broken Rubik's Cube, or a twisted, turned around Rubik's Cube. Well, the way to teach that other person how to fix that, you learn how to do it yourself. There's no bypassing that. We have to learn how to work that Rubik's Cube and get it in balance and in line and all the colors right. And then, through that experience, we then know how to go here and help somebody else with their Rubik's Cube. Right. So for us to be able to fulfill our purpose of helping mankind, we have to know what mankind goes through. In essence, this is the... I'm going to repeat myself again. This is the... Oh, 10 minutes. Okay. This is the exit strategy. Everybody's wondering what our exit strategy is. This is our exit strategy. The evolution of mankind that Jesus Christ taught is our exit strategy. And all the fears that we go through, all the fears and all the sensations, this is what humanity experiences. So here we are experiencing all of what humanity has so that we can then fulfill our purpose of contributing to the collective consciousness and showing everyone else and showing others that follow us how to fix that Rubik's Cube, how to go beyond this earth plane. We didn't start in this earth plane, and it's not meant for us to stay here, but it would be easy for that to happen. And so God asked Jesus, Amelius, to become Adam and go through the evolutionary process to create that into our consciousness. so that we could follow his example, so that others could follow our example, so that then others could follow their example, on and on and on and on and on and on and on. Actually, I giggled just a moment ago because I actually had two ideas for two workshops that I wanted to do, and it kind of worked out that I would only do one, so I worked at ways to try to blend the two. So when I'm not talking about fear, I'm talking about the exit strategy, and so that's the, kind of the blending of the two.
On the last page, which Sister Lane pointed out, is it possible to resolve fear for mankind? It is impossible. With God, all things are possible. And it brought to my mind, you know that hymn? Fear not, I am with thee, O Jesus, dismay, for I am thy God, and
Isn't that wonderful? I am thy God, and I will forever give thee aid. That brings up a good point. You know, we're not going to be able to get through fear by yourselves. We can't get through fear by being separated from God. It is actually God working through us, seeing through our eyes that we see through, that heals the fear, that deals with the fear, that heals anything. It is the process of connecting to consciousness, awareness, God, whatever you want to call it, that brings about the healing of this, the transmutation of this. It is God transmuting this as we go along. It is never us that does the work. It is not us that does the work. It is the Father that is within us.
That's what John said, perfect love, which is God.
Perfect love casts out fear. When that God force comes within us, whether it's through our awareness or whatever, that perfect love coming through us is what dissipates the fear, is what removes the fear. It is the God force within us coming forth as us, through us, with us, and all the us's. That is the active ingredient that dissipates the fear. Fear itself does not have consciousness. It is a reaction. It is a reaction from judging or that some event is harmful. Most of the times. It is a consciousness reaction. It is a reaction in consciousness. To set something out. Yeah.
Since our general weakness, of course, in miracles is a very introduction, of course, to this is the statement love is the opposite of fear. But what is all in the other side? It has no opposite. So fear is an illusion. And perfect love, the love of God, casts out fear like turning on a light in a dark world. But darkness doesn't exist when the light is present.
Even though we're talking about fear, we're talking about God. God is God that, thank you, is God that is the presence, the awareness that allows us to hold our reactions so that we don't keep on repeating the reactions. In essence, we can not go through this growth process, this learning process, this resolving fear process for eternity. We have that choice. But who here enjoys repeating the fear over and over and over and over and over? Who enjoys that irritating physical experience over and over and over and over and over? Who likes having dishes? I know you don't. Who likes having dishes in the sink forever and ever and ever? And I don't even like dishes. I eventually wash them. I wish I had a dishwasher. Yes.
Thank you.
same physical sensations normally, and so it helps us to move past those reaction to the physical sensations type of fear. Dangers in the physical world that we as adults know about that they don't know about. It's not necessarily a need to engender fear with it, but rather a wisdom that comes with it. Snakes are not necessarily fearful, but I still wouldn't put one in my pocket or let anybody play with one. So it doesn't necessarily mean need to be attached to fear. And the last few things that I wanted to mention, we're almost finished. What cleaning up fear is not. It's not going against the fear. It's not jumping out of an airplane to not be afraid about jumping out of an airplane. It's not fighting the fear. It's not trying to overpower the fear. It is simply trying to become aware of what is going on inside of us and recognizing it as a reaction. And maybe that we still attach it to common sense behavior, and that's something that we can work out as well. But there are moments that it's just fear, and we need not be afraid even of fear. Let's see. The drive inside us is always to find our home. I'm going to finish up now. There's always a drive inside us to find our way home. And it is that drive that brings us here, not just to learn and experience these great openings, but to also deal with our fear. Because we don't want fear to be a part of it. We absolutely don't want fear. I didn't want fear to continue to affect me to where I would forget why I was holding my notes in my hand. Now I'm holding them now and I remember them. That was an experience I wanted to live with or be with or continue to have in my consciousness forever and ever and ever. Amen. Because there are better things than that. Because what I gained from working through these fears is a greater awareness of myself, the love that I have connecting me to others, as well as the presence of the greatest consciousness, God. And all of that being within me, being here, being present. And it's something that I work on day to day, because anybody who knows the Enneagram, I'm a 6, which is fear-based. So I've been working on fear and have dealing with fear for my whole life. And I will continue, because it's a part of me, and so I've got dirty dishes, and so I'm going to keep on washing those dirty dishes as I can, because they're just going to sit there waiting for me until I do. So I stand up here as a person with fear and dirty dishes, having learned how to wash dirty dishes, probably having some more, and just like everybody else. And yes, we all are. Before everybody stands up, I want to bless you all in the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Yeah, and a past life is a crazy. Good, thank you. Thank you very much. If anybody wants a business card of mine, I've got plenty of them up here.